And then the Runeblade, Stormbringer, and Mournblade were gone from where they'd hung so long. And Stormbringer had settled into Elric's right hand, and Mournblade lay in Prince Irkun's right hand. And the two men stood on opposite sides of the pulsing cavern and regarded first each other and then the swords they held. The swords were singing. Their voices were faint but could be heard quite plainly. Elric lifted the huge blade easily and turned it this way and that, admiring its alien beauty. "Stormbringer," he said. And then he felt afraid. It was suddenly as if he'd been born again, and that this rune sword was born with him. It was as if they had never been separate. "Stormbringer." And the sword moaned sweetly and settled even more smoothly into his grasp. "Stormbringer," yelled Elric, and he leapt at his cousin. "Stormbringer." And he was full of fear, so full of fear. And the fear brought a wild kind of delight, a demonic need to fight and kill his cousin, to sink the blade deep into Irkun's heart, to take vengeance, to spill blood, to send a soul to hell. And now Prince Irkun's cry could be heard above the thrum of the sword voices, the drumming of the pulse of the cavern. "Mournblade!" And Mournblade came up to meet Stormbringer's blow and turned that blow and thrust back at Elric, who swayed aside and brought Stormbringer round and down in a side stroke, which knocked Irkun and Mournblade backward for an instant. But Stormbringer's next thrust was met again, and the next thrust was met, and the next. If the swordsmen were evenly matched, then so were the blades, which seemed possessed of their own wills, though they performed the wills of their wielders. And the clang of metal upon metal turned into a wild metallic song, which the swords sang. A joyful song, as if they were glad at last to be back battling, although they battled each other. And Elric barely saw his cousin, Prince Irkun, at all, save for an occasional flash of his dark, wild face. Elric's attention was given entirely to the two black swords, for it seemed that the swords fought with the life of one of the swordsmen as a prize. Or perhaps the lives of both, thought Elric. And that the rivalry between Elric and Irkun was nothing compared with the brotherly rivalry between the swords, who seemed full of pleasure at the chance to engage again after many millennia. And this observation, as he fought, and fought for his soul as well as his life, gave Elric pause to consider his hatred of Irkun. Kill Irkun he would, but not at the will of another power, not to give sport to these alien swords. Mournblade's point darted at his eyes, and Stormbringer rose to deflect the thrust once more. Elric no longer fought his cousin. He fought the will of the two black swords. Stormbringer dashed for Irkun's momentarily undefended throat. Elric clung to the sword and dragged it back, sparing his cousin's life. Stormbringer whined almost petulantly, like a dog stopped from biting an intruder. And Elric spoke through clenched teeth. "I'll not be your puppet, Runeblade. If we must be united, let it be upon a proper understanding." The sword seemed to hesitate, to drop its guard, and Elric was hard put to defend himself against the whirling attack of Mournblade, which, in turn, seemed to sense its advantage. Elric felt fresh energy pour up his right arm and into his body. This was what the sword could do. With it, he needed no drugs, would never be weak again. In battle, he would triumph. At peace, he could rule with pride. When he traveled, it would be alone and without fear. It was as if the sword reminded him of all these things, even as it returned Mournblade's attack. And what must the sword have in return? Elric knew. The sword told him without words of any sort. Stormbringer needed to fight, for that was its reason for existence. Stormbringer needed to kill, for that was its source of energy, the lives and souls of men, demons, even gods. And Elric hesitated, even as his cousin gave a huge cackling yell and dashed at him so that Mournblade glanced off his helm, and he was flung backwards and down, and saw Irkun gripping his moaning black sword in both hands to plunge the Runeblade into Elric's body. And Elric knew he would do anything to resist that fate, for his soul to be drawn into Mournblade and his strength to feed Prince Irkun's strength. and he rolled aside very quickly and got to one knee and turned and lifted Stormbringer with one gauntleted hand upon the blade and the other upon the hilt to take the great blow Prince Irkun brought upon it. And the two black swords shrieked as if in pain, and they shivered. The black radiance poured from them as blood might pour from a man pierced by many arrows. And Elric was driven, still on his knees, away from the radiance, gasping and sighing, and peering here and there for sight of Irkun, who had disappeared. And Elric knew that Stormbringer spoke to him again. If Elric did not wish to die by Mournblade, then Elric must accept the bargain for which the black sword offered. He must not die. I will not slay him to make sport for you. And through the black radiance ran Irkun, snapping and snarling and whirling his rune sword. Again Stormbringer darted through an opening, and again Elric made the blade pull back, and Irkun was only grazed. Stormbringer writhed in Elric's hands. Elric said, "You shall not be my master." And Stormbringer seemed to understand, and become quieter as if reconciled. And Elric laughed, thinking that he now controlled the rune sword, and that from now on the blade would do his bidding. "We shall disarm Irkun. We shall not kill him." Elric rose to his feet. Stormbringer moved with all the speed of a needle-thin rapier. It feinted, it parried, it thrust. Irkun, who had been grinning in triumph, snarled and staggered back, the grin dropping from his sullen features. Stormbringer now worked for Elric. It made the moves that Elric wished to make. Both Irkun and Mournblade seemed disconcerted by this turn of events. Mournblade shouted as if in astonishment at its brother's behavior. Elric struck at Yirkun's sword arm, pierced cloth, pierced flesh, pierced sinew, pierced bone. Blood came, soaking Yirkun's arm and dripping onto the hilt of the sword. The blood was slippery. It weakened Yirkun's grip on his rune sword. He took it in both hands, but he was unable to hold it firmly. Elric, too, took Stormbringer in both hands. Unearthly strength surged through him. With a gigantic blow, he dashed Stormbringer against Mournblade where the blade met hilt. The rune sword flew from Irkun's grasp. It sped across the pulsing cavern. Elric smiled. He had defeated his own sword's will and, in turn, had defeated the brother sword. Mournblade fell against the wall of the pulsing cavern and for a moment was still. A groan then seemed to escape the defeated rune sword. A high-pitched shriek filled the pulsing cavern. Blackness flooded over the eerie pink light and extinguished it. When the light returned, Elric saw that a scabbard lay at his feet. The scabbard was black and of the same alien craftsmanship as the rune sword. Elric saw Irkun. The prince was on his knees and he was sobbing, his eyes darting about the pulsing cavern, seeking Mournblade, looking at Elric with fright, as if he knew he must now be slain.
"Mournblade," he said helplessly.
He knew he was to die. Mournblade had vanished from the pulsing cavern. "Your sword is gone." Irkun whimpered and tried to crawl towards the entrance of the cavern, but the entrance had shrunk to the size of a small coin. Irkun wept. Stormbringer trembled as if thirsty for Irkun's soul. Elric stooped.
"Do not slay me, Elric. Not with that rune blade. I will do anything you wish. I will die in any other way."
"We are victims, cousin, of a conspiracy. A game played by gods, demons, and sentient swords. They wish one of us dead. I suspect they wish you dead more than they wish me dead. And that is the reason why I shall not slay you here." He picked up the scabbard. He forced Stormbringer into it, and at once the sword was quiet. Elric took off his old scabbard and looked around for Aubek's sword, but that too was gone. He dropped the old scabbard and hooked the new one to his belt. He rested his left hand upon the pommel of Stormbringer, and he looked not without sympathy upon the creature that was his cousin. "You are a worm, Irkun. But is that your fault?" Irkun gave him a puzzled glance. "I wonder, if you had all your desire, would you cease to be a worm, cousin?" Irkun raised himself to his knees. A little hope began to show in his eyes. Elric smiled and drew a deep breath. We shall see. You must agree to wake Cymoril from her sorcerous slumber.
You have humbled me, Elric. I will wake her, or would.
Can you not undo your spell?
We cannot escape from the pulsing cavern. It is past the time.
What's this?
I did not think you would follow me. And then I thought I would easily finish you. And now it is past the time. One can keep the entrance open only for a little while. It will admit anyone who cares to enter the pulsing cavern, but it will let no one out after the power of the spell dies. I gave much to know that spell.
You have given too much for everything. Elric went to the entrance and peered through. Rakir waited on the other side. The red archer had an anxious expression.
Warrior priest of Fam, it seems that my cousin and I are trapped in here. The entrance will not part for us.
Elric tested the warm, moist stuff of the wall. It would not open more than a tiny fraction.
It seems that you can join us or else go back. If you do join us, you share our fate.
It's not much of a fate if I go back, said Rakir. What chances have you?
One. I can invoke my patron.
A lord of chaos?
Exactly. I speak of Arioch.
Arioch, eh? Well, he does not care for renegades from Fum.
What do you choose to do?
Rakir stepped forward and Elric stepped back. Through the opening came Rakir's head, followed by his shoulders, followed by the rest of him. The entrance closed again immediately. Rakir stood up and untangled the string of his bow from the stave, smoothing it.
I agreed to share your fate, to gamble all on escaping from this plane.
He looked surprised when he saw Irkun.
Your enemy is still alive?
Aye.
You are merciful, indeed.
Perhaps. Or obstinate. I would not slay him merely because some supernatural agency used him as a pawn to be killed if I should win. The lords of the higher worlds do not as yet control me completely, nor will they, if I have any power at all to resist them.
I share your view, though I'm not optimistic about its realism. I see you have one of those black swords at your belt. Will that not hack a way through the cavern?
No, said Yurkun from his place against the wall.
Nothing can harm the stuff of the pulsing cavern.
I'll believe you, for I do not intend to draw this new sword of mine often. I must learn how to control it first.
So, Arioch must be summoned,
Rakir sighed.
If that is possible.
He will doubtless destroy me,
said Rakir, looking to Elric in the hope that the albino would deny this statement.
I might be able to strike a bargain with him. It will also test something.
Elric turned his back on Rakir and on Yurkun. He adjusted his mind. He sent it out through vast spaces and complicated mazes.
Arioch! Arioch! Aid me, Arioch!
He had a sense of something listening to him.
Arioch!
Something shifted in the places where his mind went.
Arioch!
And Arioch heard him. He knew it was Arioch. Rakir gave a horrified yell. Irkun screamed. Elric turned and saw that something disgusting had appeared near the far wall. It was black, and it was foul, and it slobbered, and its shape was intolerably alien. Was this Arioch? How could it be? Arioch was beautiful. But perhaps, thought Elric, this was Arioch's true shape. Upon this plain, in this peculiar cavern, Arioch could not deceive those who looked upon him. But then the shape had disappeared, and a beautiful youth with ancient eyes stood looking at the three mortals.
You have won the sword, Elric. I congratulate you. And you have spared your cousin's life? Why so?
More than one reason, but let us say he must remain alive in order to wake Cymoril.
Arioch's face bore a little secret smile for a moment, and Elric realized
that he had avoided a trap. If he had killed Irkun, Simril would never have woken again.
And what is this little traitor doing with you?
Ariok turned a cold eye on Rakir, who did his best to stare back at the Chaos Lord.
He is my friend. I made a bargain with him. If he aided me to find the Black Sword, then I would take him back with me to our own plane.
That is impossible. Rakir is in exile here. That is his punishment.
He comes back with me.
Elric now unhooked the scabbard holding Stormbringer from his belt, and he held the sword out before him.
Or I do not take this sword with me. Failing that, we all three remain here for eternity.
That is not sensible, Elric. Consider your responsibilities.
I have considered them. That is my decision.
Ariok's smooth face had just a tinge of anger.
You must take the sword. It is your destiny.
So you say. But I now know that the sword may only be borne by me. You cannot bear it, Ariok, or you would. Only I, or another mortal like me, can take it from the pulsing cavern. Is that not so?
You are clever, Elric of Melnibone, and you are a fitting servant of Chaos. Very well. That traitor can go with you, but he would be best warned to tread warily. The Lords of Chaos have been known to bear malice.
Rakir said hoarsely. So I have heard, my lord Ariok.
Ariok ignored the archer.
The man of Fam is not, after all, important. And if you wish to spare your cousin's life, so be it. It matters little. Destiny can contain a few extra threads in her design and still accomplish her original aims.
Very well, then. Take us from this place.
Where to?
Why, to Melnibone, if you please.
With a smile that was almost tender, Ariok looked down on Elric, and a silky hand stroked Elric's cheek. Ariok had grown to twice his original size.
Oh, you are surely the sweetest of all my slaves.
And there was a whirling. There was a sound like the roar of the sea. There was a dreadful sense of nausea, and three weary men stood on the floor of the great throne room in Imrir. The throne room was deserted, save that in one corner a black shape like smoke writhed for a moment and then was gone. Rakir crossed the floor and seated himself carefully on the first step to the ruby throne. Irkun and Elric remained where they were, staring into each other's eyes. Then Elric laughed and slapped his scabbarded sword.
Now you must fulfill your promises to me, cousin. Then, I have a proposition to put to you.
It is like a marketplace, said Rakir, leaning on one elbow and inspecting the feather in his scarlet hat. So many bargains!
Irkun stepped back from his sister's bed. He was worn and his features were drawn, and there was no spirit in him as he said,
It is done.
He turned away and looked through the window at the towers of Imrir, at the harbor where the returned golden battle barges rode at anchor, together with the ship which had been King Strasha's gift to Elric.
She will wake in a moment.
Divam Tavar and Rakir the Red Archer looked inquiringly at Elric, who kneeled by the bed, staring into the face of Simril. Her face grew peaceful as he watched, and for one terrible moment he suspected Prince Irkun of tricking him and of killing Simril. But then the eyelids moved, and the eyes opened, and she saw him, and she smiled.
Elric, the dreams. You are safe?
I am safe, Simril, as are you.
Irkun?
He woke you.
But you swore to slay him.
I was as much subject to sorcery as you. My mind was confused.
It is still confused where some matters are concerned, but your Kun is changed now. I defeated him. He does not doubt my power. He no longer lusts to usurp me.
You are merciful, Elric.
She brushed raven hair from her face. Elric exchanged a glance with Rakir.
It might not be mercy which moves me. It might merely be a sense of fellowship with your Kun.
Fellowship? Surely you cannot feel...
We are both mortal. We were both victims of a game played between the lords of the higher worlds. My loyalty must finally be to my own kind, and that is why I cease to hate your Kun.
And that is mercy.
Your Kun walked towards the door. May I leave, my Lord Emperor? Elric thought he detected a strange light in his defeated cousin's eyes, but perhaps it was only humility or despair. He nodded. Yurkun went from the room, closing the door softly.
Divim Tavar said, Trust Yurkun not at all, Elric. He will betray you again.
The Lord of the Dragon Caves was troubled.
No. If he does not fear me, he fears the sword I now carry.
And you should fear that sword.
No, I am the master of the sword.
Divim Tavar made to speak again, but then shook his head almost sorrowfully, bowed, and together with Rakir the Red Archer, left Elric and Simril alone. Simril took Elric in her arms. They kissed. They wept. There were celebrations in Melniboné for a week. Now almost all the ships and men and dragons were home, and Elric was home, having proved his right to rule so well that all his strange quirks of character, this mercy of his was perhaps the strangest, were accepted by the populace. In the throne room there was a ball, and it was the most lavish ball any of the courtiers had ever known. Elric danced with Simril, taking a full part in the activities. Only Yurkun did not dance, preferring to remain in a quiet corner below the gallery of the music slaves, ignored by the guests. Rakir, the Red Archer, danced with several Melnibonean ladies and made assignations with all, for he was a hero now in Melniboné. Divim Tavar danced too, though his eyes were often brooding when they fell upon Prince Yurkun. And later, when people ate, Elric spoke to Simril as they sat together on the dais of the Ruby Throne.
Would you be Empress, Simril? You know I will marry you, Elric. We have both known that for many a year, have we not?
So, you would be my wife.
I?
And not Empress, for a year at least?
What mean you, my lord?
I must go away from Melniboné, Simril, for a year. What I have learned in recent months has made me want to travel the Young Kingdoms, to see how other nations conduct their affairs, for I think Melniboné must change if she is to survive. She could become a great force for good in the world, for she still has much power.
For good?
Simril was surprised, and there was a little alarm in her voice, too.
Melniboné has never stood for good or evil, but for herself and the satisfaction of her desires.
I would see that changed.
You intend to alter everything?
I intend to travel the world and then decide if there is any point to such a decision. The lords of the higher worlds have ambitions in our world. Though they have given me aid of late, I fear them. I should like to see if it is possible for men to rule their own affairs.
And you will go?
There were tears in her eyes.
When?
Tomorrow, when Rakir leaves. We will take King Strasha's ship and make for the Isle of the Purple Towns, where Rakir has friends. Will you come?
I cannot imagine... I cannot, oh Elric... Why spoil this happiness we now have?
Because I feel
that the happiness cannot last unless we know completely what we are.
Then you must discover that, if that is what you wish. But it is for you to discover alone, Elric, for I have no such desire. You must go by yourself into those barbarian lands.
You will not accompany me.
It is not possible. I am Melnibonean. I love you, Elric.
And I you, Cymru.
Then we shall be married when you return, in a year.
Elric was full of sorrow, but he knew that his decision was correct. If he did not leave, he would grow restless soon enough, and if he grew restless, he might come to regard Cymru as an enemy, someone who had trapped him.
Then you must rule as Empress until I return.
No, Elric, I cannot take that responsibility.
Then who? Dyvim Tavar?
I know Dyvim Tavar. He will not take such power. Makum Kolim, perhaps?
No.
Then you must stay, Elric.
But Elric's gaze had traveled through the crowd in the throne room below. It stopped when it reached a lonely figure seated by himself under the gallery of the music slaves. And Elric smiled ironically and said,
"Then it must be Irkun."
Cymru was horrified.
"No, Elric. He will abuse any power."
"Not now.
And it is just.
He is the only one who wanted to be emperor. Now he can rule as emperor for a year in my stead. If he rules well, I may consider abdicating in his favor. If he rules badly, it will prove once and for all that his ambitions were misguided."
"Elric, I love you, but you are a fool, a criminal, if you trust Irkun again."
"No, I am not a fool. All I am is Elric. I cannot help that, Cymru."
"It is Elric that I love, but Elric is doomed. We are all doomed unless you remain here now."
"I cannot, because I love you, Cymru. I cannot." She stood up. She was weeping. She was lost.
"And I am Cymru. You will destroy us both."
Her voice softened and she stroked his hair.
"You will destroy us, Elric."
"No, I will build something that will be better. I will discover things. When I return, we shall marry, and we shall live long, and we shall be happy, Cymru."
And now Elric had told three lies. The first concerned his cousin, Irkun. The second concerned the Black Sword. The third concerned Cymru. And upon those three lies was Elric's destiny to be built. For it is only about things which concern us most profoundly that we lie clearly and with profound conviction. Epilogue. There was a port called Menai, which was one of the humblest and friendliest of the purple towns. Like the others on the isle, it was built mainly of purple stone, which gave the towns their name. And there were red roofs on the houses, and there were bright-sailed boats of all kinds in the harbor, as Elric and Rakir the Red Archer came ashore in the early morning when just a few sailors were beginning to make their way down to their ships. King Strasher's lovely ship lay some way out beyond the harbor wall. They'd used a small boat to cross the water between it and the town. They turned and looked back at the ship. They had sailed it themselves, without crew, and the ship had sailed well.
"So, I must seek peace in Mythic Tanalon," said Rakir with a certain amount of self-mockery. He stretched and yawned, and the bow and the quiver danced on his back.
Elric was dressed in simple costume that might have marked any soldier of fortune of the young kingdoms. He looked fit and relaxed. He smiled into the sun. The only remarkable thing about his garb was the great black rune sword at his side. Since he had donned the sword, he had needed no drugs to sustain him at all. and I must seek knowledge in the lands I find marked upon my map. I must learn, and I must carry what I learn back to Melnibone at the end of a year. I wish that Simril had accompanied me, but I understand her reluctance.
You will go back when a year is over?
She will draw me back. My only fear is that I will weaken and return before my quest is finished.
I should like to come with you, for I have traveled in most lands and would be as good a guide as I was in the Netherworld. But I am sworn to find Tantalon. For all I know, it does not really exist.
I hope that you will find it, warrior priest of Fum.
I shall never be that again.
Then Rakir's eyes widened a little.
Why, look! Your ship!
And Elric looked and saw the ship that had once been called the ship which sails over land and sea. And he saw that it slowly was sinking. King Strasha was taking it back.
The elementals are friends, at least, but I fear their power wanes as the power of Melnibone wanes. For all that we of the Dragon Isle are considered evil by the folk of the Young Kingdoms, we share much in common with the spirits of air, earth, fire, and water.
Rakir said as the masts of the ship disappeared beneath the waves,
I envy you those friends, Elric. You may trust them.
Aye.
Rakir looked at the rune sword hanging on Elric's hip. But you would be wise to trust nothing else.
Fear not for me, Rakir, for I am my own master, for a year at least, and I am master of this sword now.
The sword seemed to stir at his side, and he took firm hold of its grip and slapped Rakir on the back, and he laughed and shook his white hair so that it drifted in the air, and he lifted his strange red eyes to the sky, and he said, I shall be a new man when I return to Melnibone.